This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, I want to make this point again. This is honestly the only time we have recorded Mike Osterholm before the show. And then, of course, breaking news happens. Part of it. But we want to emphasize that we know now that Minneapolis and St. Paul will require customers to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 72 hours, enter restaurants, bars, and other entertainment venues. That's going to kick in on January 19th. Because this was announced the last 30 minutes, I did not ask Mike this question when we recorded this interview around 11 o'clock. But we get to many other important topics. And after I'm done with Mike Osterholm, I want to hear from you through phone calls and text on what you think about this change, dramatic change, by Minneapolis and St. Paul. I started the conversation with this worldwide expert, epidemiologist, asking him about this dramatic spike in hospitalizations. In fact, we now have more people hospitalized from COVID than we ever had during this entire run.
Well, I think what's going to happen over the next several weeks is we're clearly going to see case numbers increase, including hospitalizations and deaths. And from that perspective, it's going to get worse. CDC today is predicting that we very well may have 62,000 additional deaths just in the next 4 weeks. As you know, deaths have now risen to over 1,700 a day, and the number keeps going up. But I think the good news is that if we can get through the next 3 to 4 weeks, like any blizzard, we're going to have days where we're going to have melting snow. And in this case, I think that by early to mid-February, the case numbers will come down precipitously. It'll be like the difference between the actual blizzard versus post-blizzard. So the question you're asking, which is really a very, very critical one, is what's going to happen in the interim? And I think, we just have to be honest and say it's not going to get better, but how much worse is not clear.
Okay. If the death totals are moving up, is this causing you and other experts in this area to reevaluate the severity of Omicron itself?
No, not really. I mean, if we go back, and we have a historic record here of our previous interviews dating back 6 to 8 weeks ago, when I talked about this viral blizzard back then, when we had very few cases in the United States, and realizing that what data we'd seen out of South Africa and initial data out of Europe, that there may be this reduced level of severe disease. But I think we need to clarify that for the audience, because that's been confusing. When we talk about milder disease, what we're really talking about is the fact that the percentage of people who get infected overall have a lower level of serious disease, hospitalizations, and deaths. So let's just take, for example, theoretically, if Delta caused 100 out of every 1,000 people to be seriously hospitalized, you might look at Omicron out of those same 1,000 people, only 10 would be seriously ill or hospitalized. And that would seem like a really good thing. The problem is Omicron is occurring at such a high rate, it's more than 10 times higher in some cases than we see with Delta. So suddenly your absolute numbers are much higher. And that's what I think people aren't understanding. Then you overlay that on the perfect storm event, something you and I have talked about many times. We have been hanging on by the skin of our teeth in this country, providing health care. Our health care workers have been stretched beyond anything you can imagine. now lay on top of that, that 20 to 30% of them are out themselves because they're now infected. And you have a, really a perfect storm moment. And so the quality of care in many of our hospitals around the country right now has been severely diminished. And that's going to add to more deaths and more serious illnesses just because, you know, trying to provide battlefield medicine is very different than trying to provide it in the confines of a high-tech ICU in a hospital somewhere. And that's what, in a sense, is almost happening. And so I think that's what part I can't yet get my arms around and say to you, that means that this many more people are going to be seriously ill, this many more people are going to die. This is also why the CDC, and as you know, on last week's call, I said this, I supported their efforts to relax the requirement that we make people get tested before they come back to work in the healthcare setting.
Yes.
Look at,
right.
If we have people who have mild cold-like symptoms and they're infected and they will wear an N95 and they will come to work, cohort them or put them with patients already infected with COVID so you're not putting anybody at greater risk of transmitting to or from, and I'd rather have them at that bedside than nobody at all. And that's where we're at right now. That's the crisis status we're in. So I think that will all, you know, all play out over the next several weeks. And I think our healthcare systems will have not been under any kind of duress like they are now, dating back to 1918.
Mike Osterholm is with us. Okay. You mentioned viral blizzard. You first used that term in the show. As you said in your answer about 6 weeks ago, you've used it elsewhere. Dr. Fauci today says, by the time we're done with Omicron, it will affect just about everybody. By the time we are done with this wave, Mike, what percentage of Americans do you think are going to test, of the folks who test positive, of the folks who test, excuse me, are going to test positive from Omicron itself? If we're talking about a viral blizzard, and Dr. Fauci saying it's going to touch just about everybody.
Well, it's going to be a lot. I can't say that everybody's going to get infected. I also would say that, you know, I urge people, please don't get infected now. And they say, well, it's a milder illness. That may be true, but it's not a mild illness for everyone. And imagine also the same following scenario. I have 10,000 patients in a large healthcare system that are going to get Omicron and require hospitalization. If those 10,000 present over the next week, that's very different than if they present over the next 2 months, in terms of what you can do for care and how you can handle that. And so, you know, anything we can do to postpone these cases is going to be helpful. The second thing is, you know, there is good news on the horizon, and that is the fact that I think these new drugs are going to be really, really critical. You know, Chad, you and I talked about this before, but, you know, if we'd had the same discussion in the early 1980s and we talked about people having HIV, that was a death sentence back then. That was a guaranteed death sentence. Today, HIV is a managed chronic disease for many people because of the drugs we have. Well, I think what's going to happen is we're going to get better vaccines. That's going to help, but that's ways off. But within the next month to 2 months, we're going to see more and more of these drugs become available, where if you take them in the earliest stages of your infection, you can do a tremendous amount to reduce serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths. Man, I got to tell you, when I get my Omicron infection, even though I'm fully vaccinated, I want to have access to those drugs just in case. And so I think that, again, there's reason to want to not get infected. Now, you know, many people won't have a choice. You know, they're going to be in everyday life. They're frontline workers. They have kids in school. But if you can reduce your risk, now's the time to do it. And part of it is, as we talked about before, I got to get a plug in for quality masks. Use your N95 respirators. They're critical.
Okay, so I want to talk about that. Just in a moment, but on these drugs you're talking about that will lessen the potential of severe illnesses, will these be available to all of us? Because we've had these conversations before, and I want to get to mask in a second about mask availability and testing availability. So will these drugs be available to all the folks who need them?
They won't be initially, but over time we can flood the market with these drugs. And I think that it's not just a market here in the United States, but for the whole world. And I'm optimistic about that. It won't happen overnight, but we got to have a grand plan. You know, I was a co-author on a paper this past week with my other colleagues who were on the Biden presidential advisory group between the election and the inauguration. And we put out a paper in the Journal of American Medical Association on looking at the new normal. What is it going to mean? What is it going to look like? This is part of the new normal. is trying to move on and have the vision for how can we make this such that we live with COVID. We don't just run from it. We're just not frightened by it. How do we live with it? How do we minimize the number of people who are seriously ill and die? How do we minimize the social impact that it has on our society, the economic impact? And I think these drugs, along with new and improved vaccines, are going to be a very important part of this.
Dr. Michael Ostrom is with us. Chad Hartman here with you on CCO. So, Mike, are we heading to COVID being an endemic where it is always going to be a part of our lives? It is just the lesson with vaccines and the drug availability.
Well, you know, this is a very important point because I'm not quite sure when people talk about endemic what they mean. I talk to different people with a lot of different meanings.
Yep,
but
sure.
Let me just be really clear. You know, it was a little over a year ago that I got in a lot of trouble with a lot of people, as you know, because I said I thought that the darkest days of the pandemic could still be ahead of us. We were coming off an early January peak of cases. Vaccines were flowing. But, you know, I kept focusing on these variants and the fact that they were game changers. They could be 210-mile-an-hour curveballs. And sure enough, we saw that with Delta. We've seen that with Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you that we're not going to see more variants in the future that may evade the immune protection of our current vaccines, people who have gotten natural immunity from having been infected. That can happen. Do I know it's going to happen? No. I hope it doesn't. But as we've also said, hope is not a strategy. And so we've got to be prepared for another Omicron-like event to happen. But we can get much better prepared for it. Now people get it. They understand it. There were far too many people in June and July that wanted to believe this was behind us. Therefore, we needed to do nothing else to get ready for it. So, you know, I don't want to see something like this ever happen again. I hope it doesn't. But if it does, we can handle it much better. Second of all is even in the times between these new variants emerging, we can have really the kind of what I guess I would call near normal experience where we can actually go into public places and we can do things that we just months before would have felt uncomfortable doing. And I think that's going to be part of the reality.
So I want to talk about the CDC and how they're coming out now and pushing N95 masks. I don't understand this, Mike. You on this conversation between the two of us have been talking about the power of N95 masks for what, 7, 8, 9 months?
No, actually, I published my first article on that in April of 2020.
Yes,
this
right.
is where we needed to go.
CDC,
were responsible. I know.
I don't understand. The CDC loses me on some of this. And when people get frustrated, some of it isn't based in fact. But on this part, in the CDC and N95 masks now, are you kidding me? Why not? Why wasn't this done months and months ago?
You know, we're going to have plenty of time to go back and do what we call a hot wash, where we understand from what happened, what could have happened, what should have happened, what did happen, and what can we learn from it. That is going to be one of them. We have a newfound understanding of what it means to have a safer indoor environment with air. It's very important. You know, something we've been advocating for. You know, initially when we were pushing for N95 respirator use, it did come initially at a time when we had a limited amount. But that, in terms of the number for the general public versus the healthcare side of the house. But, you know, within short order, the companies really ramped up manufacturing capacity. And for more than the past year, we've had more than ample N95 respirators available for the public. And so, yes, it was a missed opportunity, and it often broke down into you're either for masking or not masking. As you know, I many times were critical of cloth masks, of, you know, the bandanas.
Yes.
They really are very, very, very inefficient. But that wasn't against masking. I just wanted quality masking. You know, we've done studies looking at how masks are used in the public, whatever that term might be, up to a quarter of people routinely still wear it under their nose. You know, that's like fixing 3 of the 5 screen doors in your submarine. What good is that? You know, and so we need to do a much better job of helping people understand how they can better protect themselves. It's this layered issue. Get vaccinated. In public settings, use that kind of mask, particularly if you're at high risk for having serious illness. We can do much better, and we need to.
So that's our conversation with Mike Osterholm earlier. We have the news in the last 45 minutes that Minneapolis and St. Paul will require customers to show proof of vaccination or negative COVID test within 72 hours to enter restaurants, bars, and other entertainment venues. Okay? We've seen this across the country in other cities. It's now taking place here in the two biggest cities. It kicks in January 19th. In normal times of levels of respect over an attack which has killed 840,000 people, I think this would be effective. Now, I don't know how effective, to be honest. Because I think more and more people are not going out. More and more people aren't going to these cities because of crime issues. More and more people who work at these restaurants are going to face challenges of customers who are just going to be jackasses. And then there is so much skepticism about Omicron, and if it isn't as severe as Delta, why should I be punished? I'd love to say this is significantly going to help the businesses in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but I don't think it will. What do you think? I want to hear from Dan and you. Phone calls and texts right now. We'll have 6-7 minutes to take your phone calls and texts on an enormous change which has happened in the two biggest cities in the state. Let's go with calls and texts. 651-461-9226. 227, our friend Michelle Tafoya, in about 10 minutes on her future and what's going to happen now that she's leaving NBC Sports. Dan, you heard me saying in normal times where this was an area of respect and decency and without diminishing, where I think a change like this when Omicron is everywhere. And again, it is still less powerful than Delta. The hospitalizations are up because you have so many more people who are testing positive. Normal times, they'd be, sure, I'll do whatever I have to do. We're under attack. 840,000 people have died. 5 million have died across the world. But no, this isn't real. You're buying fake numbers. I don't want to go to Minneapolis and St. Paul for some legitimate crime issues anyway. This gives me more of an excuse to go somewhere else. It also puts the businesses, the restaurants, the hosts, the bartenders, the waiters, the waitresses in a tough spot. I get the idea. I'm very skeptical it's going to work.
I am too, because I think, you know, the other factor is that the horse, to a degree, is kind of out of the barn when it comes to Omicron. A lot of these measures, you know, we complain about stuff at the CDC in terms of their communication on masking and Biden pushing various solutions to the problem. Where were we 6 months ago, folks? I mean, when Omicron was first identified and starting to hit. That, if you're going to try and do something like this, that was, to me, the time to do it before it had spread like wildfire throughout the whole holidays. Trying to do it now, again, like you said, you put businesses in a tough spot. And I'm not averse to putting businesses in a tough spot if I really think it's going to help. But at this point, to me, it's out there, and this isn't going to be a huge help.
Among the texts coming in, additionally placing hosts of eating establishments in the role of health inspector to review vaccine credentials is a recipe for ugly confrontations. Tomorrow, Jacob Fry's on this show at 2:45. I may place a phone call to the official restaurateur, my great friend Dermot Cowley, and see what Dermot thinks about this. Owns O'Donovan's in downtown Minneapolis, has owned restaurants in Minneapolis and suburbs for years, and how he feels about this. And again, Dan, this is the thing we talk about all the time about, you know, wearing masks and other policies. Who's going to be checking on the restaurants to see if they're doing this? And where are those people coming from?
It was one thing. It was one thing to have to check and see whether places were actually open or not. You know, when we had the lockdown, that was one thing. But trying to police this, good luck.
This isn't going to change a thing. Vaccinated people are spreading it just as much as the unvaccinated. Well, without a doubt, the unvaccinated are getting more serious illnesses. Omicron and vaccinated and unvaccinated. And who spreads it more? To me, Dan, when I see it, there's still a scientific debate on that. Doesn't make me regret in any way getting vaccinated and boosted about the severe illnesses, but on the spreading without the severe illnesses, that is a valid point about what's going on right now, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would push back on the idea that vaccinated people are spreading it at equally as much as vaccinated people. I'm not sure the data supports that necessarily, but I do believe that vaccinated people do spread it to some degree. And so, yeah, in that case, I think that's a valid concern.
This is like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, and the mayors are looking for thanks. Large venues that hold concerts and sporting events, such as U.S. Bank Stadium, Mankato Civic Center, Prairie Island, Mystic Lake, so on, should have had vax and mask requirements months ago. These venues have been careless and selfish and are responsible for a lot of the current spread. I felt like many venues could have had vax requirements a long, long time ago. You are with me, correct?
Correct.
Chad, does this apply to U of M sporting events? I assume yes, right? Has to.
If food or beverage are served there, yeah, I would think so, yeah.
I would think 100% in Minneapolis, so I would assume. And they said this is temporary. We don't know what that means, right?
No.
We don't know how long that means. I think there will be more negative pushback on this than positive. Do you?
Yes, I would concur with that.
Yeah. Including people who believe that COVID is every bit as legit, but the effectiveness of this and the discourse problems which are going to take place. I'm going to get Quentin off the bus. Laura's going to give you the weather, and our friend Michelle Tafoya is going to join us in a matter of minutes on her former radio station, WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.